Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thank you, one and all, for being with us, hopefully once again. Wherever you are and whenever you are, it's 9 p.m. in New England where I am, but you could be listening to this anywhere in the world at any time, and that's really cool. So my guest tonight, speaking of people from other parts of the planet, is Graham Gardner, who's from Scotland, and he's here for the convention of the American Society of Dowsers, which is where I met him originally, because we're both speakers at the convention. And he was just bugging me that I'm not up there yet, but I will be up there tomorrow at noon. And I want to talk a little bit about dowsing and the convention, and then we'll talk with Graham about his new book, which is on a subject that I think people are curious about, but nobody has really studied before. So I'm really excited about his book. Dowsing is basically a questioning method in which you get your answers from your subconscious mind using a tool. It's called, people say it's a biofeedback tool, and most people think of dowsing as using a pendulum. And that's the most common tool, but there are a whole bunch of other tools. If you're looking for water, you use a Y-shaped tool. If you're looking for certain things underground, there are L-rods that are easier to use. But the pendulum is the one that most people know about. And it's a system for getting yes and no answers. So you get really good at asking the right question and the right series of questions. And one of the things that I always find fascinating about that is basically it creates a computer. Because all a computer does is answer yes and no questions. It's just ones and zeros, on or off, yes or no. So you ask the first question and you get a yes or a no, and that leads to the next question, leads to the next question. And the truth is that almost everybody who does any kind of intuitive work is having that conversation in their head anyway. They may not use a biofeedback tool to get the answers. They may use other methods, but basically that process of having something come into your head and having a conversation with it, which when I say it that way to some people is going to sound totally wacky, but that's really what it is. A thought comes into your mind and a lot of people will just let that thought go. Oh, that was weird. And you keep on going. You know, you don't want to trip over it. You might fall. But people who have learned to use their intuition will start questioning that first insight. What does that mean? Oh, that's interesting. I never thought of it that way. Tell me more about that if it's somebody who can get a stream of consciousness from it. But if somebody is a dowser who doesn't have psychic skills, and psychic skills are just the five senses expanded. I call it being broadband. So the visible spectrum is an extremely small portion of the entire electromagnetic spectrum, but that's normal sight. So there are people that can see in a wider range of frequencies. And I always liken it to listening to AM radio. In this country, if you listen to AM radio, it's fuzzy and it's hard to tune in, and all you get is mostly conservative, wacky talk shows and country music. And as you go across the country, there's always AM radio stations, but it's a really limited kind of repertoire of information that you get. But there's FM radio, and there's the police band, and there's TV, and the cell phones, and all of that stuff is in other electromagnetic spectrums and require a slightly different kind of electronic machine to pick it up. And that's what it's like being psychic. instead of listening to AM, you're listening to broadband. There's a whole lot more that you tune into. And then once you tune into it, you have to sort it out. And dowsing is a really effective method of sorting that out. And I'm actually teaching a method I developed for collecting information quickly using dowsing on paper, of all things, rather than using a pendulum. But I learn more at these conventions than I ever teach, because there are people who have been doing totally amazing work for 30, 40, 50 years, and they're very nonchalant about it, and they have no ego about it. Oh, yeah, I did this. And I'm like, wait a minute, stop. Back up and tell me how you do that, because I've never heard that before, and it's a piece to the puzzle. And that's one of the reasons I love going to the convention, is it's an incredible community. And besides, there are friends there that I only see once a year at the convention. So it will be great fun to hang out with some buddies, including Graham. So that gives you an idea of where we know each other from and what we're doing this weekend. And now that's tonight's metaphysical musing. And let's talk to my friend Graham Gardner. How you doing tonight, Graham?
Hi, David. I'm doing pretty well, thanks.
Thanks so much for being on the show. I know the convention is at a junior college in the middle of nowhere in Vermont, and the Wi-Fi connection has gotten better over the years, but is often a little bit strange, so you had to find a place that had decent Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I'm stuck in this classroom on my own here, and it's very large, but the Wi-Fi connection is solid, so it's pretty good.
Great. Great. Yeah. The last few years, they're finally getting the Wi-Fi up there, right? So I want to talk about your book, because you're talking about the effects of things like Wi-Fi and other high-frequency devices that have become so pervasive. But let's introduce people to who you are and how you got here. You've been on the show before, so you did the long version of your personal story, but give us a little overview of how you wound up doing this.
Yeah, we did the dowsing story the last time, really. In my day job, I worked in theater as a lighting technician and production manager. So I've kind of been exposed to large-scale EMFs, most of my working life. And also I toured shows around the country a lot and internationally. So I became aware, once we started getting into all these new wireless technologies, that some places I was staying, I wasn't sleeping too well, and by this point I was dowsing. So I would douse the bedroom, so I knew there wasn't anything geopathic going on. And, over a period of time, I kind of narrowed it down to the fact that I was near a Wi-Fi router. There was one night I was staying in Dublin in a really nice bed and breakfast, very quiet. For three nights, didn't sleep a wink at all. Mm. And on checkout, I found that the Wi-Fi router was on the ceiling right underneath my bed.
Oh, dear.
So I experimented in other places after that. I would ask if they would turn off the Wi-Fi at night. And most places were happy to oblige. And of course, the nights I didn't sleep was the nights they'd forgotten to turn off the Wi-Fi.
Right.
So I noticed this definite correlation. And that's really what got me started researching into this.
So you're calling the effects of these devices technopathic stress.
Kind of playing off the idea of
geopathic stress, which is things from the earth that affect human beings.
So yeah, this is technology. Human beings.
Yeah,
exactly.
This is.
Yeah.
And so which are the technologies that seem to have the most effect on people?
Okay, well, I'll give you my quiz. I have a little card on my stand here with five sources of microwave radiation on it. And I want you to tell me what you think is the worst one, okay?
Okay.
So we'll start with cell phones, like Bluetooth headsets would be the next one, Google Glass, that sort of stuff. Cell phone towers in your neighborhood, wireless routers in the home, or cordless phones in the home. That's the five.
What was the last one?
Cordless phones.
Oh, cordless phones. My inclination would be Wi-Fi routers.
Yeah, most people say that. Would you be surprised if I said it was the cordless phone?
Yeah, actually. I didn't think that they put off that much of a signal because it's such a short distance. But yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with the cordless phones and the same with the Wi-Fi is that these things are transmitting at full power all the time. Mm-hmm. Whether you're using it or not, you know, you're bathed in this signal 24/7. And the cordless phone is compounded when you're actually speaking on it, because then you're getting the same sort of exposure levels as a cell phone. So if you're the sort of person that spends a long time on the phone, you know, you really should invest in getting a normal landline corded phone and stop using a cordless.
Right. Right. Well, there are ways. I'm curious whether these ways work, but there are ways to reduce your exposure while using it. One of them is using the speakerphone, so you're not holding the phone next to your head.
Sure, yeah.
And the other is a Bluetooth headset, which is a different frequency and a much lower power signature.
It's a much lower power, but yeah, again, you're getting the exposure in your ear, and you're also getting the exposure from your cell phone, if it's a Bluetooth cell phone you're using. So you get right. Two sources, and they're talking to each other all the time, whether you're on the call or not.
Yeah.
You know, as long as they're paired, they're communicating. So, yeah. Yeah, it's difficult. We're so addicted to these devices now, it's really hard to get away from them.
Yeah, as we were talking just before the show, I was realizing that where I'm sitting here, I've got the Wi-Fi router, the cordless phone base unit, a smart meter outside downstairs, not far away. So multiple sources. The good news is they're all in one place, so the rest of the apartment doesn't have as much exposure. The bad news is it's my office.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sitting here with, talking to you on a Wi-Fi enabled phone, so yeah, it's kind of ironic. Yeah.
So what kinds of you've been looking at this for a while? What kinds of issues besides sleep disturbances are common?
Okay, well, the thing with this communication radiation, this microwave radiation that we use for like Wi-Fi and the cordless phones, is the fact that it's digitally encoded. So it's not like normal FM radio, say, or AM radio. It's digitally encoded, so you have a series of very high peaks, pulses in the signal. And that kind of has two effects on us, one of which is physical. It kind of stresses the membranes and the cells in our brain, in our body, and it inhibits the elimination of toxins because the cell membranes are sort of vibrating in this signal. And on a psychological level, it kind of entrains our brain rhythms into that sort of frequency, into that beat. So we're marching to the beats of the Wi-Fi drum, if you like.
Which is a very high frequency.
It's 2.4 gigahertz, but the actual carrier frequency, I can probably demonstrate this with my handy microwave meter, which I have here. Let me just see it. There we go. So you can hear that sort of machine gun noise?
Yeah, it sounds disturbingly like a Geiger counter.
Yeah, but it's that rhythm, and it really sort of—it's very close to our brainwave rhythms, and so it does entrain your thoughts, which is why you can't sleep. Yeah, and people get more sensitized to this stuff over time. The more the exposure, the more sensitive some people become, to the point where they cannot live with the technology. They have to go and live in the woods or something.
Right, and as I mentioned to you, I have a friend in Australia who's the most clairvoyant and sensitive person I've ever met in my life. She does absolutely amazing work. Mm-hmm. And she lives in Brisbane, Australia. And she takes at least two walkabouts a year.
Yeah.
Where she just drives off into the outback and camps for typically a month or 2 months.
Yeah.
Just to get away from it. Just to allow herself to come back to normal.
Yeah. And you mentioned smart meters earlier. I'm sure you're aware of lots of stories, especially here in the States, of people getting sensitive to smart meters and getting quite ill. Quite apart from there's also stories of smart meters bursting into flames and stuff, you know. So it's a very unproven technology, I think.
Every time they come up with a way to do something without sending someone to your house, it reduces costs and theoretically makes it all more accurate, and that's what they're trying to do. But there is no awareness at all in most industries that use electronics that it might be affecting people physically.
Yeah. Well, also the thing, the levels of exposure that the government set, I think I'm right in saying the US and the British government use a similar sort of scale on this. These are all based on what they call thermal effects. And that's the sort of level at which the microwaves start to heat up your body cells, just like a microwave oven does. So the accepted levels are set based on that. But these digital pulses can be like 100 times higher than that, and several times a second. So your exposure is so much greater. And there's over many thousands of peer-reviewed scientific papers now showing that there is definite biological effects even at these levels.
Now, with for each of these technologies, what kinds of things can people do? The kind of stuff that comes to mind is the aluminum foil hat, but which probably would work.
We used to joke about that, but actually, it does work. a couple of decades ago, we were all making jokes about tinfoil hats. Now we all should be wearing them.
exactly. That could be our next business. Radiation shielded baseball caps.
Well, don't laugh. You can buy these things. You can buy screening material. It's like has a metal impregnated threads throughout it, which does screen the microwaves. And you can get clothing made up like this. You get a complete range of underclothing, and there's a sort of beekeeper's helmet with a gauze. Some people have to wear this. They just can't function otherwise. But anyway, to get back to your question, ways to deal with it. Obviously, the easiest way is to try and remove the source. That should be your primary route of attack. So try and get rid of Wi-Fi if you can. I have my router has a switch on it, so I can switch the Wi-Fi off. And I have everything wired on Ethernet. So I only have to switch the Wi-Fi on if I need to use my tablet or my smartphone. Mm-hmm. But then I live in an apartment, so I can usually pick up the Wi-Fi from somebody downstairs, So I very seldom have to switch my Wi-Fi on. Again, it's about intensity. You said your office is at the other end of the building from where your router is. So that's reducing the levels, So it's really about trying to keep distance from the source, and you're getting rid of it if you can. So certainly don't use a cordless phone in the house if you're the sort of person that spends a long time on the phone. Likewise in your office, if you're making a lot of calls all day, try and get a wired handset put in. If you can't switch off your Wi-Fi during the day, try and disconnect it or switch it off at night. You'd be amazed the number of people I've told to do this, and they've found that they sleep so much better. Yeah. Actually, my neighbor downstairs, whose Wi-Fi I tend to steal, when she moved in, I noticed I wasn't sleeping very well for a few weeks, and I hadn't thought about this. Of course, I got my microwave meter out, and there was this like really hot spot right above my side of the bed, which is above her bedroom. So I went down and knocked on her door and said, can I talk to you about this cordless phone you have at the side of your bed? She was very surprised at this. But she took it on board, all credit to her. And so as a housewarming present, I bought her a cordless phone model that doesn't transmit all the time. Mm. There's one in Europe called the Gigaset range. I don't know if it's available here. I don't think it is available in America. There used to be one here, which I mentioned in the book, which you can still get secondhand. They only transmit when you're on a call, and when you're not on the call, they shut down completely. So the Gigaset range in Europe is ones that you can set to that. There's a couple of other models that will go to a low power setting in between, but they won't shut off completely. So that's a way to go if you really feel you must have a cordless phone. So so that's about the main things. It's possible to screen buildings, to screen rooms, but you're getting into expense here. You can buy reflective wallpaper, or you can put tinfoil on the walls behind the wallpaper. You can get carbon paints. There's a wallpaper that actually absorbs the radiation as well. And you can get mesh curtains with this metal foil in that will stop the microwaves coming through from cell phone towers and stuff. So there's ways to do it, it all does add up to some expense, though. So you're just going to try and minimize it, really, as best you can.
Right. Expense and complication. Especially if you live in an apartment rather than owning the space.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, it should be your bedroom that you're focusing on, because it's during the night that your body is trying to repair the damage accumulated during the day. So that's really your body's downtime and recovery time. So you should try and protect the bed as much as possible. So, don't have any Wi-Fi or phone stuff in the bedroom. It's possible to buy bed canopies, like a mosquito net that will screen the microwaves. that can be quite romantic if you have a four-poster bed. You can make a feature out of that.
We both know people that are probably doing all of these things simultaneously.
Yeah.
And may well meet them this weekend because of the wide range of things that people are focused on in the community, which makes it a lot of fun. I often say that at this convention, I am not the strangest guy in the room. Ever.
Yeah. That's why we come to these things.
That's right.
Just to remind ourselves. Yeah.
Because we're so normal. And that's not to say that everybody is wacky, but there are definitely people at the fringes of every conceivable thread of study and thought. And the ones that are at the far ends of it are interesting.
Yeah.
But I learned from them too, because they've delved into things that nobody else would consider important enough to focus on. So it's always interesting. But I don't want to in any way denigrate the dowsing community and the convention, because even the people that are focused on what seem to be strange little corners of study are doing absolutely fascinating work and have interesting information to share. So,
absolutely. Everybody's got their own story to tell. And that's why a dowsing convention is such a great place to hang out.
Right.
You always learn something.
Right. Especially over a coffee or a meal, because somebody will have a throwaway line and say, stop. You may have done it for 40 years, but I've never heard this before. Back it up and tell me the whole thing.
Yeah.
And you get another piece to the very complicated puzzle that we're all trying to figure out about how all of this works.
Yeah.
So, Graham, let's make sure that people know how to find you. And we haven't mentioned the name of the book. Tell us
the
name. That's right.
Yeah, the book is called A Basic Guide to Technopathic Stress. And I deliberately wrote it as a sort of easy access book that people can, delve into as required. It's divided into chapters which deal with each of the different hazards. And it's kind of graded from severe stuff at the front to less severe stuff at the back. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like a risk assessment for your home, if you like. So you can get it from my website at westerngeomancy.org. It's also available on amazon.co.uk. I'm not sure if it's up on .com yet. And it's also available on Kindle.
Fantastic. All right. Well, we are going to be back shortly, unless we get taller. We have some messages. My guest is Graham Gardner from the UK, and this is David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio. We'll be back in a minute. Don't go nowhere.
Many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
Where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg.
Ha-ha, I win. Whoa! Ah!
Sassy! Johnny fell down the well.
I'm wet!
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl! What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold!
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound health and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with Graham Gardner from Scotland. Although right now he's in Vermont. And we're talking about his book about technopathic stress and what we can do about it.
Yeah, at least I'm in the right time zone this time. Eh? Well, actually, a lot of people ask me, what can we do about it? You know, is there something we can buy that will just magically fix all this? And there's all these gadgets on the market that, you know, purport to be a cure for this. And you get a lot of dowsers that say that we can fix this, we can change the frequencies to be beneficial to us. I'm not convinced because, you know, I can still put the meter on it and it'll still be showing up at the same levels. It's an interesting area that can we do anything energetically as dowsers about it? So I don't know is the answer.
Well, I've I've heard a lot of information about shifting microwave ovens, and I've done that.
Yeah.
And doused it out. So the potential to, you're not changing what the device is doing, you're changing the effect.
Yeah, but I mean, I would say that with any healing modality that you're trying to apply, if you're not removing the original stressor in the first place, you know, you're compromising any healing you're trying to do. You know, it's, you're taking an aspirin, you know, to mask the symptoms, but you're not curing the problem.
Agreed. I'm thinking of the kinds of things that various people teach about microwave ovens. Mm-hmm. And there's a field that you can douse to find the edge of it.
Yeah.
And when you collapse it, it's not there anymore.
Yeah.
So, however that works.
Yeah, I mean, microwave ovens are interesting as well. I mean, this, of course, is where this technology evolved from. But a microwave oven doesn't have the same pulsing that we use for the digital right. communications frequencies, although it's the same frequency range.
Right. It's either on or it's off.
It's either on or it's off. But you can do an interesting experiment with your microwave, and that's put your mobile phone inside it and shut the door and then try calling the phone. You know, I guarantee you, the phone will ring. So, you know, these ovens are not as well screened as they would have you believe. You
know? Well, that's always true, and the way that they test them usually is not testing for what needs to be tested. So, indeed, the whole thing is more complicated. But in your reading and study of all of this stuff, is there anything that has turned up as other than turning things off, obviously, which is the most effective thing? Is there anything in terms of how to use your cell phone, how to use any of the other devices or what you can put in the space and around them?
For your cell phone, if the easiest thing you can do is when you're making a call, if you don't bring the phone to your ear until you hear it ringing, because when the phone is trying to connect, it's transmitting itself at full power to find the nearest cell mast. Once it's found that and made the connection, the power level drops down dramatically. So just doing that will, you know, cut your microwave exposure by 80-90%.
Wow.
Yeah, if you use it a lot, a lot of people say, well, I use a headset, you know, like a wired headset, which I'm using now, actually. But it's been demonstrated that wired headsets actually transmit the microwaves up the cable.
Up the cable, yes. I know about that.
Air tube headsets?
What's that?
You can buy air tube headsets where the last couple of feet are a hollow air tube. So you just get an acoustic thing up the, you know, up the last couple of feet. They're the best solution.
So, and they're called Air Tube?
Air Tube headset, yeah. Sorry, yeah, I say never, tube, but yeah, tube.
I've never heard of it before. So, yeah, that's definitely something to look into. I know Bluetooth headsets are better than holding the phone to your head.
But a lot of people walk around with a Bluetooth headset on all day, you know.
Well, which to me is crazy. I don't, you know, are you so important that you have to have your phone ring in your ear? But I had the wonderful chance 8 or 10 years ago to speak to a woman who was researching all of this stuff in the early days, and she had an interesting thing to say about Bluetooth headsets. The cell phone has to scream to talk to the tower. So it puts out a whole lot of power. The tower may be a mile away. But the Bluetooth whispers, it only has to reach the phone. And it's a different frequency range and is coded differently. So in terms of the choices of putting the phone next to your head, or even holding it in front of your face with the speakerphone, which is what most people do. It's away from the side of your head, but still usually in front of your mouth. If you only use the Bluetooth when you're talking and you turn it off, then it does have some advantages because you're not exposing yourself to that high level wave from the phone.
Sure. Yeah, I know some people who have a Bluetooth headset, but they don't have it in their ear until they get a call. I mean, I used to have one when I was driving, but I did that. But I usually found by the time I found the headset and found the button to activate it, I'd miss the call.
What I do in the car
me from my driving.
What I do when I'm in the car, if I'm expecting a call, is put the Bluetooth on my ear, but I keep it turned off.
Right.
And when the call comes in, I turn it on, and the Bluetooth finds the phone. It works fine. So
yeah. I mean, sometimes I have to wear one for work if I'm driving a van or something. And I had a hands-free kit that I used to clip onto the sun visor. But that's 2 inches away from my head. And I was getting a headache halfway through the day from this,
right,
even though I wasn't
right.
making calls, just with the Bluetooth coming off it.
Yeah.
I know a couple of people who wore Bluetooth headsets all day at work, who developed like acoustic neuromas, like tumors on that side of the head.
Yeah,
I've known a couple of cases like that. So yeah, okay, that's just my empirical observation. I'm not saying that's proven, but
it's all exposure. Suspicious. Yeah, it's all exposure level, and there are people that wear a Bluetooth all day turned on. Whether it's for their cell phone or it's for a cordless phone, they'll do it with their business phone too. It's as much a fashion statement and a sense of coolness and wow factor as any necessity at all.
Yeah. So, there was an interesting couple of reports when Google Glass was being trialed. People were reporting right-sided headaches. And they were all attributing it to some visual thing from the prism affecting their eyesight. Nobody commented on the fact you've got this Wi-Fi transmitter right behind your ear,
Right. It's one of the things about being an early adopter of any kind of technology is there's always some factor that nobody has thought of. But especially when it's radio frequency.
It's interesting. There's a lot of European countries are changing their recommended levels. There was a report done called the Bio Initiative Report. They did one in 2007 and one in 2012. And some European countries have been reducing their levels, particularly France. France has just made it, they've just said that you have to take Wi-Fi out of school nurseries and any other schools. You can only have Wi-Fi on when it's in use for a lesson, then it has to be switched off. France has also been pulling Wi-Fi out of some public buildings like libraries because the staff have been complaining of headaches and illnesses. So, yeah, interesting that people are beginning to take notice of this.
Right. And it can be a big problem in libraries because they set up a whole set, or at least here there'll be several banks of computers for people to use, and then one of the reasons that people come to the library is free Wi-Fi. So
of course,
but it's also
same at college,
right? And that's also true pretty much of every coffee shop in the United States.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're being exposed to it all the time,
Right.
I know Google and a couple of other folk have been talking about putting in high-altitude balloons or, solar-powered drones that will broadcast Wi-Fi to places where there isn't any. And you're saying, well, where is this going here, Do we really need this technology?
Well, it's because their business model depends on everybody having access to the Internet.
Yeah. And that gets into the whole smart meter thing and the smart grid. The smart meters are the sort of beginning of the smart grid. They want every house and every street to be able to talk to everything else. So all your appliances will link back to your central router, which will probably be your smart meter. That will then feed back to a router in the street, which will feed back to the utility company. That will also be creating a public Wi-Fi network in the street and so on. So you're going to have this global wireless grid where everything is talking to everything else.
Right, which gets into the area of dirty electricity and intentional dirty electricity.
Yeah, well, also the issue of privacy, you know, quite aside from the radio frequency stuff going on, there's issues of privacy because companies will be able to monitor your energy usage. They will likely start charging you higher rates at peak times. They can disconnect your power remotely with a smart meter, you know, all these kind of things.
Right. Well, the dirty power thing has to do with bad, the original term had to do with bad distribution and picking up other frequencies other than the electrical sine wave. But there are systems of setting up Wi-Fi in your home where it's transmitted through the electrical wiring of your house.
Yeah, they're good. Power line systems, they're called usually. They're pretty good if you haven't got any alternative. I mean, I'm lucky enough to have a top floor apartment, so you know I can just run Ethernet through the attic space without much difficulty. But if you're in a situation where you can't do that, then a power line system works pretty well. But it does introduce this dirty electricity, which is this noisy spikes on the system.
Right. So everywhere in your electrical system, all over your house, in effect has the microwave frequency, even though it's not as loud as it is if it's.
Well, no, it's Wi-Fi. it's not the same frequency it's doing, but it does dirty up the sine wave, so it gets fuzzy and choppy, and it's those electrical spikes that cause more of a problem than any particular microwave stuff. All our computers and televisions and stuff these days have these little ferrite cores on them, usually. Mm-hmm. This little sort of black cylinder on the lead just where it plugs in. And that's essentially a big slug of iron that soaks up all these spikes on the cable, you know, cleans up the dirty electricity.
Trying to keep the power source from killing the device it's supposed to be powering.
Yeah, sure, because if you get one of these big spikes, your computer blows up, and you can buy filters for this if you're using one of these power line systems. Also, you get these power line ones that will act as Wi-Fi repeaters, so you get a little Wi-Fi repeater that plugs into a socket somewhere. Mm-hmm. They're handy, but make sure you switch them off at night would be my advice.
Yeah, there's a corner of the property here with this wonderful tree that makes a wonderful pool of shade in the afternoon, and I really want to be able to sit out there and work.
Yeah.
But I would have to get one of those Wi-Fi repeaters. To transmit the hundreds of feet across the property.
That's a long Ethernet cable.
Which would get mangled? Which would get mangled when they mow? You know.
yeah. but we haven't the dirty electricity. We haven't really spoken about the power frequency EMFs, which is the other side of the technopathic stress picture. These are much lower frequency. We're talking like 60 hertz here, 50 hertz in the UK, and the effect of lying in a magnetic field overnight has very detrimental effects. So if you sleep with your electric blanket on, say, you're exposing yourself to a chronic level of EMF with that. So again, it's about trying to keep your bed clear of these things. So don't have like clusters of wires under the bed, and try and keep your bedside alarm clock a few feet away. With all these EMFs, you have the inverse square law, which comes into effect. So the further away it is, then the much less harmful the level is going to be.
Right. Right. So theoretically, you shouldn't have your cell phone on the nightstand either.
Oh, no, for sure. Yeah. If you have to use your cell phone as an alarm clock, then put it into aircraft mode. The alarm will still work, but it's not transmitting the microwaves. Well, at least I don't think so. I think some of them do actually check in the middle of the night just to let them know that they're still here, you know.
It's fascinating to me, we have all of these devices that are using this stuff and we know so little about the way they work. Most people have no idea how it works.
And most people don't care.
or how it's affecting your, well, that's right. You know, people are drinking and smoking and all the other things that they're doing that are known problems. And so Wi-Fi is pretty low on the list of bad things to do.
Yeah. They don't care until they get sick. Yeah, when they start getting sick.
And then they're horrified and wonder why nobody told anyone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But there's more, plenty of websites out there that you can find out more information about this. In researching the book, I've trawled through, I've lost count of how many websites I've been researching and the books that I've read on this. Some of them are more scary than others to read. Some of them are deliberately inflammatory, but you can find a few good.
That's the problem with all of that is there is the lunatic fringe that mostly is wanting to get people upset.
That's really why I wrote the book. I wanted to try and sift through that and just get down to the hardcore. These are the facts. This is what you need to know, and try and present it in as basic and simple a fashion as possible, so that people just have the facts at their fingertips and they can go and do their own research. Which is what it's about. It's all about empowerment, isn't it?
For many people, our conversation and access to your book is going to be the first time that they've ever heard of this or considered thinking about it or looking at it. So it's wonderful that we can give people this window into something that most people just have no idea about.
Yeah. I do firmly believe it is something that is going to become more prominent in the years to come. And 5 years down the road, I'm pretty sure we're all going to be talking about this because more and more people are getting sick all the time.
Right. Right. And I would guess that people develop a sensitivity to it over time as well, like so many other things. Exposure to any kind of toxin has to do with how the dosage and how long it's going on.
Yeah. So there's been a couple of well-documented cases of engineers working for telephone companies like Nokia and Ericsson, their head engineers who have become so sensitive they can't actually work. They've had to stop work.
Right.
Go and live in a radiation-free zone, like in the forest or something. That's two well-known cases in that. There's also another case in America with a mother who took her son out of college after he developed cancer because there was a cell tower on the roof of the dorm. And she found there was several other previous inhabitants that had cancer in that particular room. So
how many people need to get sick before they at least don't put anybody in that room, for crying out loud? That's crazy.
I mentioned
to you my friend in Australia who has to get away. Periodically, she just takes her camping stuff and goes out into the outback and is gone for a month or two until she her body sorts it out, and then she can come back to civilization.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the best things we can do is go out and get in touch with the earth. Go and walk in bare feet on the ground, and earth yourself back to the natural potential. That's a related subject, and it's worth doing some more study on that. You can get an earthing sheet for your bed that you can connect to an earth rod outside the window or through the earth pin on your wiring. And that certainly helps. I've noticed a definite difference in sleep quality with that.
Mm-hmm.
And that drains the free radicals from your body because, you get the electrons from the earth that come up and neutralize free radicals overnight. So, you sleep better. Any muscle pains are much reduced. A lot of athletes have been using these, like Tour de France cyclists tend to sleep in earth sleeping bags overnight because reduces the lactic acid in the muscles. They feel more relaxed and ready to go in the morning. So, it's worth looking into that kind of stuff as well.
It always gets back to the most basic things and getting back to the earth and connecting to nature. A big part of the problem is how much we live separated by the technology, but also by man-made materials. So you can go outside, and if you're wearing rubber-soled shoes, you're still not connected to the ground.
Yeah.
You've got this huge insulator between you and the ground. So,
yeah, and in our offices, we're walking on synthetic fibers. You know, we're wearing like rubber sole trainers and stuff. Yeah, we build up a charge in the body during the day. Often you'll notice that when you touch a metal handle or a banister or something, you get a static shock.
Right.
You know, that's an indicator that you've got too much charge in your body. So yeah,
I was just reading an article about a study that was done on the effects of hugging trees. The old you're a hippie tree hugger thing, and how much of a improvement in both physical and mental health occurs if people just either hug or lean against a tree for some period of time every day.
I was doing some of that today, actually.
Take your shoes off and put your feet on the ground, sit up against a tree. Go to the beach. Which in many ways is why people feel so relaxed at the beach. They're sitting on sand, which is grounded and a crystalline structure. The waves are a negative ion generator. The wind's a negative ion generator. And they go, gee, I feel so good at the beach. And,
and what does that tell you? Yeah.
So my guest tonight has been Graham Gardner from Glasgow, Scotland, here to visit and teach and do some other things. Thank you so much for being on the show. Tell us again the name of the book and your web address.
Okay, the name of the book is A Basic Guide to Technopathic Stress, and you can get it from my website, which is westerngeomancy.org. It's also available on Amazon, and you can get it on Kindle. If you buy the paperback on Amazon, though, I would ask you to wait until next Tuesday, because I'm the one that's selling it, and I'll have to wait till I get back to Scotland before I can post it out to you.
You're an early adopter, and you're getting it out there, but I hope that this show, because most of the people who listen to the show listen to the podcast, so it probably will roll out over the next couple of weeks anyway. But I hope that people will find your book and read the book and tune into all this, because this is a whole new issue, which some people are sensitive to, and you wouldn't necessarily realize it. You would just think you had a sleep problem, or think that you had an earache or headache or something else, and not connected to this. So this is very important information, and thank you so much for writing the book, and thank you so much for being on the show.
It's a pleasure. And if you're coming to the conference, my talk is at 1:45 on Saturday afternoon.
Well then, and mine, I have one at 9 a.m. on Saturday and another one at 1:30 on Sunday. So we'll just hang out all weekend.
Yeah, I look forward to talking to you for my podcast when you get
there. Yeah, we'll figure out a time to do that. Turnabout's fair play, and he's going to interview me. So thanks so much, Graham. I will see you tomorrow.
Yeah, look forward to it, David. Thank you.
You're welcome. And if you got at all curious about this guy, David, and what does he do, you can go to househealing.com. And cleverly hiding in plain view on the contact tab is every conceivable technology for getting in touch with me, including a link to my scheduling calendar. I do a 20-minute free assessment to see what's going on with person, place, situation, whatever it happens to be, and we can see how my work might be helpful to you. If you want more about the show, please go to thefarkasfiles.com. Isn't that clever? And there's the entire archive of, how long has it been? 4.5 years now of interviews with incredible people who are doing incredible things. So please take advantage of that, and you can get more background information. Empower Radio is also streaming on TuneIn, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. I think there's something else, but almost every one of the streaming iTunes Podcast is another one. And so catch us there. To all of you who donated to our Indiegogo crowdsourcing fundraising program, we didn't get the goal, but we got enough money to upgrade the equipment and create a new app and do some other things. So thank you so much for your support. It was a wonderful, wonderful thing that we could do that. And now we're going to be able to take things to the next level, which is great. So until next week, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.